Hey, this is Robin.
This is Jackie.
And this is Amanda.
And you are listening to We Saw the Devil, a podcast dedicated to horror, true crime, and all things macabre. If you want to follow us between shows, don't forget to check us out online. You can go to our website at www.wesawthedevil.com. You can follow us on Instagram at We Saw the Devil Podcast or on Twitter at We Saw the Devil. And if you want to follow specific co-hosts' social media, you can find the links to those on our website as well. Hello, everyone, and thank you for listening. This is our part four of our Lori Vallow series, where we have been deep diving on the case. And it is now March 1st, approaching midnight. So this episode will contain and be comprised of everything that's happened from February 23rd to March 1st. Just to give you a little bit of an idea, and a lot has come out once again over the last week.
There's been a lot of things found. I wouldn't say it's new information. It's just uncovered information.
Which honestly, like, you know, in the land of speculation has been kind of major. So again, like last week, this is going to be somewhat of a lengthy episode. We're going to deep dive into everything from subpoenas to social media presence, Chad and Tammy's debts that were uncovered.
Recovered
crazy emails, both from Chad to Lori and then from Lori to Chad as Charles.
For some reason. And
for some reason, the hotel, well, a property owner in Hawaii received an email from Chad back in November looking for a place to go. And then Melanie replied to Brandon Boudreaux's accusations, shall I say,
yes,
last week.
With a few of her own to add.
So this episode is going to be batshit crazy. So we're just going to kind of go in and, as always, give you guys the updates.
Right. And we tried to make an outline to make it make sense. And even with an outline, it's all kind of random. So bear with us.
And for those of you who have reached out, what's so crazy is that I'll be in like a completely different forum, right? Or like in a true crime group or something. And I'll say, hey, I'm doing some research for a podcast. Does anyone have X, Y, or Z information? And someone will be like, oh my God, I go to you guys for updates.
And that made me so happy.
It makes me so happy too. So thank you for listening to us. We really try, you know, to provide you guys with the updates succinctly. And, you know, one of the things that I pride this podcast on is that you don't have to listen to an hour of our personal life story, you know, histories and stories before we get into things. So,
well, we really appreciate and your support from viewers like you.
And a thank you to our Patreons as well.
Yes, absolutely. And any positive words becomes motivation for us to continue.
Yes. And again, right before we get into this, again, if you're enjoying the show and you want to support, please drop a review on iTunes or Stitcher. Hit that review button or the like button. And if you really want to support, we want to make the best show possible for you. So please think about being a patron on Patreon. And you can hit up our Patreon at patreon.com/ We Saw the Devil. We have different tiers of benefits, and hopefully there is one right for you. But you can subscribe for as little as $5, going up to $25. So,
hey, if you want a t-shirt, sticker, business card, insights before they come out, hey, subscribe.
Okay, so let's get into the very first thing, guys, which is the bail reduction hearing a couple days ago on February 26th.
Yes, the judge promptly declined that again.
Promptly. And we're talking promptly.
Which, oh, and I noticed Lori had a different attorney by her side this time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The other attorney was weird. I'm not going to lie.
Did either of you recall the woman attorney, though, that she had?
Oh, she was staring off in space.
I don't understand what she was in the first hearing. So going back a little bit more. She just stood there.
Like,
she like, barely moved. Yeah, and she had like a weird stance. I don't know what she was there for, but I guess she was helping somehow.
You know, maybe she was more of like a paralegal or something like that, or training, or, you know, shadowing.
That could be. I hope that they're training people instead of actually working for her.
Right. So going into Wednesday in the bail reduction hearing, so everyone thought that it was just going to be a standard bail reduction hearing. It actually ended up that Lori has given up her fight
of extradition. She's like, nope, I truly believe that she knows it's inevitable that she will end up in Idaho. So she's like, fine, just take me there. Maybe mm-hmm. she's hoping for a more sympathetic audience, you know, since Rexburg and Idaho is more LDS populated, more, you know, with Mormons. But yeah, so she is going back to Idaho, and apparently law enforcement officers from Idaho are on hand, and she will be transported in the next couple days.
Can we talk about how the mighty fall so hard? Her hair, since she can't straighten it, oh my God, she looks like a different person, you guys. Mm-hmm. No makeup, no moisturizer. You know that. She looks like she needs some moisturizer, I'm just saying.
She has the female version of Justin Timberlake's hair in the late 90s.
Oh, the ramen.
The ramen.
It has soup hair.
She has soup hair. She has ramen hair now.
I do, too.
It's okay.
Yep.
It's okay, Lori. Well, on top of that, too, this this jail that she's in supposedly is a very nice jail compared to where she will be going.
Oh,
what have you heard about that one?
Just saying that for the standard, and again, they haven't really released where they've been keeping her, but like the standard person, they have a very, you know, fairly easygoing schedule. I know it's monotonous and they don't like it. They get up super early to eat. They have like outdoor time and TV time and all of that, because they were a little worried that everyone would know who she was because of their TV time. But from what I've been reading is where she will be going, it's not going to be as nice. And, you know, think of it, Hawaii weather, the outdoor time versus Idaho weather. Just little things like that.
Yeah, and so she also has access to a PlayStation right now.
Oh my God, I want access to a PlayStation in prison. Sounds like heaven. Sounds like a gaming cave.
Wow, I didn't read that part. So, yeah, she's probably going somewhere that doesn't have PlayStation, I'm hoping.
I hope so. She doesn't deserve it. Like, where That's the hell crazy, are the kids, though. Man?
So, yeah, she will be extradited. As of, I know the update that I read was as of Friday, February 28th, just because it's the weekend. I don't think much really will happen as far as moving. But as of Friday, the extradition was still being planned, and deputies had not yet left Idaho for Kauai. And that was per Justin Lum.
And as Amanda said, her bail remained the same, right? So two new questions will arise once she reaches Idaho. She's eligible for another bail reduction hearing. So she can apply to have her bail reduced again. And let's say it is, okay? Let's say that she's bailed out. She can also request home detention too, right? Like basically like ankle bracelet and shit. If that is actually the case, where does she go? Does she go to Chad Daybell's home that he once shared with Tammy Daybell, now deceased? That would be utterly fucked up if true.
Interesting. Well, let's hope it's not, because something else that surfaced this week was how much Chad had in his bank account.
Mm-hmm. And now this is not to say that Chad has, you know, potentially other bank accounts.
Yeah, of course.
Well, let's actually, do you want to start with what surfaced in Chad and Tammy as a whole with their debts?
Yeah, that's a good start.
Because then we can kind of go from the bottom up. So it basically surfaced over the last couple of days that Chad and Tammy had over $350,000 worth of debt and filed for bankruptcy back in 2008. And the bankruptcy paperwork, someone, I believe maybe Justin Lum, came up with the bankruptcy papers from 2008, and they were in such a dire financial situation. They had over $100,000 in debt related to their book publishing company, Spring Creek Book Company, which was Chad Daybell's publishing company that he used to publish people like, you know, Julie Rowe and so forth. Their assets totaled $149,657, but they had debts in the amount of $353,000. Their assets included their home, which was priced out at $135,000, and they had less than $100 in their bank accounts. Basically, anything they owned, and their book company was worth $0.
Right, and that was back in 2008 when they filed.
Mm-hmm. Chad Daybell listed the asset copyrights to 20 books written by, you know, Chad Daybell, like the debtor. He listed an annual income of $2,000. and then finally, they owned a 1997 Mazda Protege that was valued at $2,000 and a 2005 Chrysler Town and Country van, a turtle, two rabbits, and a parakeet.
But the van was worth $10,000.
I'd pay more for the animals.
Yeah, me too. They still owed $95,000 on their home, $7,000 on a second mortgage. They were paying off a $37,000 lien. They listed 5 kids ranging from 8 to 16 years old. Both of them listed their jobs as book publishers. Chad's average income was $3,300 and Tammy pulled in a whopping $1,500. And at that time, Chad was working part-time at the Springville City Corps and Tammy was working part-time as an overload technician.
So with that little income, though, how were they even living?
That's a great question. Very lightly.
Probably in debt.
Well, who was helping them? You know, because that was all their debts that they listed, but just an average income was $3,385 for Chad and Tammy was $1,579.
So it's $3,927.
Yeah, so
that was it.
What's that frequency? Yeah, just
they weren't paying stuff, that's what it sounds like. Yeah. So they were in debt.
Something's missing here. Yeah. Because like how they were taking care of that many children.
That many children plus a loan, a second loan, and a lien.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a reason why they have a lien, probably.
Well, I mean, yeah, they obviously filed bankruptcy, but still just how are they getting by even?
Maybe his parents or someone, you know, was helping them do the bare minimum. That's a lot, though.
It sounds like they're misrepresenting something.
Well, yeah, that's what it seems very strange.
Okay, so their bankruptcy was officially closed in 2010, and $203,000 of their $353,000 debt was wiped clean. That still leaves, what, $150,000 left over in debt as of 2010, okay? To my knowledge, nothing happened big on Chad Daybell's, like, career, life, whatever. That's speculative. Now, let's fast forward to this bail reduction hearing here in 2020 with Lori Vallow. It came out that Chad only has like $150,000 in his bank account.
Yep, $152,000 in the First Hawaiian bank account. And that's what prosecutors noted. So I know he just got the payout, right? So he received at least $430,000 in the life insurance proceeds from Tammy. So just wondering where the rest of that money is. And it could be somewhere in Idaho for all we know. I have no clue. But they're just saying in the First Hawaiian bank, it was $152,000.
And I don't believe, did we talk last week about Chad moving back to Idaho or we speculated that he was going to?
I think we speculated, but now people have, spoken to him at the airport, tried to get him to talk. He wouldn't, but he was at the airport leaving. And then other people have been driving past his house in Idaho and say that he is there.
Also, East Idaho News, Eaton, the journalist, has confirmed that Chad Daybell is, in fact, back in Idaho and Rexburg. So Chad Daybell is there. Now, as far as where the money's gone, they were living it up. I mean, they would, you know, spend a weekend at the rental home that they had, and then they would go to the resort for a couple nights, and then they would island hop over to Maui. And one thing that was really interesting is one of the final videos/pictures of Chad in Hawaii was him packing up the rent-a-center van. Like, they came and got the furniture. So they were renting all of their furniture.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I mean, that also says that they didn't plan on being there long. Maybe she knew it was coming.
The jig is up.
Yeah, they knew it was going to happen when they got there. Like, there's just no way of nothing coming of it. So I'm sure it was just, should we buy things? Nah, I'm going to be, arrested soon. Because, that was after she didn't produce the children anyways, so.
So, interesting stuff there. Let's see. Something else that came up is, so Chad, as we mentioned, Chad has 5 children. And they've been damn near silent, all except for Emma. And some of you may recall, Emma is the daughter. She's married, has kids of her own. But she, for some reason, likes to flip off and give the middle finger and make funny faces at media and reporters. So you may have seen those videos. Well, someone found her Reddit account. And so apparently, long story short, apparently because people can't just follow true crime, they have to take it real life and then dox people. So Emma ended up taking her account offline. However, A screenshot was taken. This account, this post was made back in November. And basically the title is Exhuming Body Without Family Permission. And this post goes on to say, and it is confirmed, Emma Daybell. She says, my mother passed away on October 19th, 2019. The coroner told us it was natural causes. It looked like textbook definition of heart failure. The death was unexpected and my family has taken it hard. My dad has already remarried. A friend of the family lost her husband earlier this year, and for whatever reason, she and my dad decided to tie the knot. It feels weird, but I already had a positive relationship with my new, quote, stepmom, and she has helped our family grieve. It's definitely a weird marriage. Both still talk to their former spouses frequently. My dad misses my mother terribly. A few neighbors, led by my aunt in our small town, have decided that since my dad remarried so quickly, he murdered my mother. This started out as a benign, although hurtful, rumor. It has escalated to the point, however, that they exhumed my mother's body for an autopsy. The family had no warning. We went to visit her grave and her body had been dug up. I don't know the results of the autopsy yet, but I feel extremely violated. I just want to grieve. I'm hurt that my aunt would cause so much trouble. Has anyone else experienced anything like this? I feel so alone.
That's a sad post.
Yeah, that's really, like, sad.
And not only that, but it looks like she joined Reddit back in October, right after her mother died. Right after Tammy died, she joined Reddit only in the group, the subreddit Grief Support.
Oh,
got it. Yeah, that's sad. And when was that posted? Does it have a date?
So she wrote this in December at some point. I can't see the exact day.
Yeah, Tammy's body, I believe, was December 11th, I want to say, was exhumed.
So who is she referring to as her aunt then?
Probably Tammy's sister, right?
I would think so.
So I'm wondering then, Tammy's sister possibly is who she's talking about, Samantha William, because she's the one that told police that Chad and Lori had said, or Chad had said Lori had no young children, or had said to her that she didn't. Very confusing. There's so many people.
So many people. But that's really,
it's like
really
Game
sad.
Of Thrones to me. So many people, so many storylines, so many plots. Like, I just can't keep up.
It is. But that's incredibly sad. And, you know, since Emma is the one that's always making a deal and sticking her tongue out and showing just, like, being just kind of outrageous, that her Reddit feed of, you know, showing the tender side, the upset side, like, she was grieving so hard.
Right.
So that was, like, you know, interesting to see.
Well, there was another thing, and I don't know which of his kids this is technically about, but it was published a day ago by Fox 10. And it's talking to our favorite Roe friend. And so that's Julie Roe. And what it says is Julie said that she had spoke to Daybell's daughter. So it could be Emma. I don't know how many daughters he had. The day her mother died. And she was saying that she was afraid that her father would remarry.
So that was her big fear.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, in that other part that you just read, though, she said that she had a good relationship with her. So that's just kind of strange. If you have a good relationship, I mean, I guess you could still be afraid of your parent remarrying someone that you liked just because it's like a replacement. But that's crazy to say on the first day that your mother's dead.
No, that's absolutely insane.
I don't even think would you think about that the first day? I feel like grieving's hard. There's no right or wrong way to do it, I guess, but it's just an odd thing, to me at least.
Nothing about this family has been normal.
Yeah, but that's what Julie Roe says. Again, who knows if that's right or wrong, but that is in the article.
Now, also, speaking of Tammy's autopsy, I checked the status on that. They did say it could take up to a year, right?
Right.
So I was really curious as to why it could take such a long time.
Right.
And so I did a little reading on it, and basically, it depends on the state of the decomposition, the different chemicals and toxins that could be found, right?
Okay.
But apparently, the main thing is that on doing the autopsy, they need to figure out three different, whether it's therapeutic, toxic, or lethal, like the amount of, you know, the toxin. So anyway, so if you recall the case of Dr. Harold Shipman, he was a doctor in England, and he was estimated to have murdered 220 patients.
Jesus.
During his practice. Probably one of the world's worst serial killers, right? So basically, the vital evidence in his case was the drug analysis on exhumed bodies. They exhumed 9 bodies that he killed, and they were able to do a thorough drug analysis and interpretation of the morphine, in his case, morphine concentrations. So
it's not murder if it's not practice.
Anyway, from everything that I've read, it's actually possible that law enforcement in Idaho already has the results and they're sitting on it, because here's the thing. They will actually sit on results until they have a corresponding police investigation, right? Like corresponding police investigation into it before they actually fully put out the cause of death sometimes.
That's
especially
smart.
If the FBI is involved.
Mm-hmm.
So they could already have the full, you know, for people being like, why isn't Chad arrested? Why hasn't Chad been arrested? It's very actually possible for Idaho to have Tammy's autopsy back. It does link poisoning, and they're just trying to pick, you know, put the pieces together so that they can go ahead and get Chad. So, like, that is possible, guys. Like, there are so many moving cogs and wheels going on at the same time. That is actually possible.
It makes it harder for them to come up with a defense with their attorneys and stuff, too, when the, like, the pieces are moving and nobody knows how they're moving.
Well, I think also with the, you know, that Chad does have money in his account. And so, like, you know, everyone was a flight risk. Like, Lori was a flight risk. I think that Chad is also a suicide risk, to be honest. But, you know, in my opinion, I believe that he is a suicide risk.
I believe that as well, yes.
That picture of him, too, if you saw it, of him in his car and how just the look of just stress and... I think you're the one that mentioned it looked like he was almost pulling out his eyebrows.
Yeah, it looked like he was pulling out his eyebrow hair.
Yeah, that's not crazy.
So I'm sure. Yeah, he is not doing well. But another thing we looked up, just speaking of, you know, waiting for results, I looked as of today. So again, it's March 1st at Maricopa County records for Alex. And it still says manner of death is pending. So no medical examiner report is ready, and everything, primary cause of death is still pending as well. So still looking each day to see if anything changes on that.
I think I'm more fascinated by Alex than I am any other piece in this case, to be honest with you. So let's go ahead and
talking about it.
Yeah. Let's talk about some Alex pieces. So one thing I want to point out, and then I'll switch it over to you, Amanda, is that I've seen in a lot of the Facebook groups and on Twitter, the storage facility footage, right? A lot of people are starting to now question, is that Chad or Alex with Lori?
Why?
Because that is part of Melanie, when she basically replied back to the allegations that her ex-husband had said, she was like, well, it couldn't have been Alex because he's in the video footage on that day. So the day of the shooting that happened to Brandon, or Alex is in the footage from the storage lockers, supposedly. You can't tell, but her lawyer pretty much said, well, or I think it was her lawyer, there's an interview with someone surrounding the case saying, well, from a verified source, that's him. And they're like, who? He's like, his cousin. So like, again, it's hard to tell because it's just outline of whoever's there. And I guess the mannerisms, if you knew both of them, you could probably decipher who it is. But without knowing how each one holds themselves and walks, it's kind of hard to see.
I saw the video and it looks like they're moving like car seats to me. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, there's a whole list of things that they could have been moving because it's just the shadow or outline of it. It's hard to see.
It's the
but
angle,
if that
too.
Wasn't. Yeah, but if that... If Alex is the one that shot, then do you guys have any idea or any guesses on who shot at Brandon?
No fucking idea. And I feel like over the last like week since we last recorded, right? Since like the 23rd, so much other shit has just been like come out. So I do believe that it was Alex at that storage facility, right? Like I personally believe that it was Alex based on the police, you know, not dash cam, chest cam, whatever. I believe that was Alex. So therefore, like you just said, who shot right. Brandon? Who fucking knows? Because then if you really want to get into it, also at Melanie, I mean, I guess we'll just cover Melanie right now, but like also at Melanie's hearing, who showed up? But Azulima Pastenes.
Yeah. As well as Lori's sister.
Yeah. Summer. And Lori's sister Summer were both present at Melanie's court hearing. Now, riddle me this, someone. Zulima Pastinus was married to Alex for what, right. less than 10 days? Like less than a week, even?
It wasn't very long.
So Alex ended up dead in Zulima's bathroom, and Zulima's son had no fucking idea who it was, thought it was her boyfriend. You know, that entire thing we covered in our last episode. Why, then, was Zulima at Melanie's hearing?
Right. The only thing I could say, I mean, they got married a couple days or a day, right, after Alex got married. So, and he was their witness. So I wonder if she was also present. So maybe, you know, they bonded over their wedding weekend. That's, you know, like, it's just this random woman that he married.
This random, like, almost 60-year-old woman just decides to come to this cute little blonde girl's, like, custody battle. I feel like she was sent there as a watchful eye.
I don't know, man. I don't know. It's kind of weird.
And who killed Alex?
Do you guys have any thoughts on that? Do you guys have any thoughts on who killed Alex? I mean, only she and her son were home. So,
well, only supposedly. Her son was, because didn't she arrive? It sounded like, at least when you listen to the 911 call, sounds like she gets there.
Do you not think it was normal, the 911 call? Why?
Because the way that he was speaking was just very, I got a, what did he say? Like, I'd have to get the call back up. Like, a man in his 40s and he's not responsive. Okay, tell me more. Alex, you okay? Like, it was just very, it wasn't like someone you knew. You know, if someone you knew was her, even if it was like a common acquaintance, you'd have more feeling for this person. But it was like a total stranger that he knew his first name and didn't even care, you know, like didn't care about this. I feel like even a stranger, you'd be like, oh my gosh, what can I do?
Yeah, he declined all of it.
Yeah, no, there was no like elevation in his voice. There was no panic. It was
flat very affect. Like,
yeah. And then when they're like, can you get him down? I can walk you through how to do, I think it was CPR. He's like, well, there's feces on the ground.
What?
It's like, if you want to save someone's life, you don't, it doesn't matter. Just like, do what you're being told to do. But this guy was just like, eh.
Why was there feces on the ground?
Either he was pooping as this incident happened, or his bowels released themselves due to, yeah, so that came out, you know, the Alex storage, and so Melanie's custody. So Melanie went to court, and by herself, Brandon did not show up. And
I don't think he was needed for this part, if I understood it correctly.
I was unsure.
Yeah, like, I think it's just, it was a custody hearing, so I think that they both go and, like, again, it's very fuzzy because all that's being released really is them walking in and then what her lawyer put out. So there was a press release, or I don't know what you'd call it, for February 26th. So I have that in front of me. I can read little parts from it. But
let's recap really quick before you do on the 23rd. Yeah. So don't forget that on the 23rd in the child custody hearing, you know, from Brandon, right? Brandon claimed that Ian Pawlowski, Melanie's new husband, provided statements to law enforcement that Melanie knew where the kids were, right?
Right.
They also claimed that that Ian Pawlowski told law enforcement that Melanie, right, told her new husband that she conspired with Alex to kill Brandon. Brandon also alleges that Melanie was motivated by a $1 million life insurance policy. And so it sounds like, right, on that custody paperwork on the 23rd, Brandon made it out to seem like Ian Pawlowski, Melanie's new husband, was just, like, spilling the beans.
Right.
And then, Amanda, if you want to cover on the 26th, Melanie's, like, response to that.
Yeah, so it's a document from the law office of Robert P. Jarvis. And it's titled Melanie Pawlowski Speaks Out.
And which is very legal sounding.
Yeah. Well, the first sentence in the document is bold. And it says, Melanie Pawlowski, if I can speak. So Melanie Pawlowski does not know the whereabouts of her aunt's children. Brandon Boudreaux lies to wrongfully influence the child custody case. Media irresponsibly reports one-sided and unsubstantiated accusations. Brandon Boudreaux hides his own family's dark and sinister acts and past. This seems very, like you said, it just doesn't seem very, I don't know, proper. But it's from Mesa, Arizona, and it just, the highlights of it is kind of that. She says that, or he says that she cooperated with law enforcement, including meeting for hours with the FBI on three separate days. And she told the FBI that she does not know the whereabouts of the missing children. Brandon has a history of victimizing women, which probably an extension of his extreme and dark use of pornography, which, okay. Melanie confronted Brandon in June of last year with proof of his pornography addiction and homosexual affairs.
Yeah. I mean, that just fucking went from zero to, you know, 60 in like 1 second.
Yeah. Yeah. It goes pretty crazy. So it also says he retaliated with threats to attack her and take the kids. He carried through his threats by lying in the court documents. So basically they're just saying, all right, media, you're very one-sided. He has this, 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 and this. And he, you know, he lies about things.
Well, here's my question is, didn't he have the kids to begin with and she tried to steal them?
Yeah, that's a
question.
That's
the thing, too. In that text that came up, she's like, you can keep the kids in Arizona. You'll just have to find daycare.
Yeah.
And then the thing with the text I don't like is that it says, you know, you can open up that text. It's much longer, but you only see the first sentence of that text. So that does lead me to think, what did she continue with there? Did she say, I would gladly take the children here? We have no idea. For some reason, that is cut off. We don't know what she said after that, other than the kids can remain there with you. I'd like to just figure this out between us. But if you do want to spend money mediating this, we can, something along those lines. So this kind of rebuttal basically says that the Boudreau family continues to unlawfully keep Melanie's children, and they're out of school, and they're in a home with an abusive history. They're saying that he's manipulative, that Brandon Boudreau has failed to tell investigators about his family and how they've covered up child molestation, drug addiction, kidnapping, assaults, and even killings.
What?
An organized crime.
Wow.
Yeah, that they're an organized crime family. And then it says, as shown in the storage video, Alex Cox was in Idaho on October 2nd, the day of the alleged shooting. There simply is no truthful evidence that Melanie was involved in any way. In fact, it is more likely that Brandon Boudreau was involved in one of his elaborate manipulations. So basically, he shot his car himself. Right?
Makes sense to me.
Woo.
So I don't know. They both seem kind of crazy. I mean, if any of these allegations are correct, you know, both of them just seem...
That was Chandler, insane. Arizona, where he got shot, right? Okay, well, regardless, though, right? It was in Arizona, and the footage was taken in Rexburg. So from Chandler to Rexburg, it's 920 miles and 14 hours. So it's not like if it was Alex in the video that he could just, like, hop, skip, and jump down to Chandler, you know, or vice versa to try.
Well, if he did get on a plane immediately, it's only, like, 2 hours, I think.
That is true.
So, I mean, could have. I guess we don't know the time that video was taken versus the time that he was shot at.
And I'm sure law enforcement at this point does know if he decided to board a plane. So
I'm guessing so, yeah. So the letter from the attorney goes on, though, and says Melanie was never associated with a cult. Melanie is a lifetime member of the Church of Jesus Christ and Latter-day Saints, and her beliefs are consistent with the church. Melanie holds close her belief to loving God. She loves her children and respects life. Okay, so, and then it just goes on, yeah, that it's false accusations. And it's just, you know, throwing more stuff into it for the child custody. Now, the one thing that I didn't like is the way that he ended it. It says, everyone's asking where Lori Vallow's children, you know, asking where they are. Why is no one asking the same question about Melanie's children?
Right.
And I kind of want to shake him and be like, well, we know that Melanie's children are alive. We know where they are. We know that, you know, they are with a family. I guess
they're being cared for.
I guess the statement that they're saying, though, is like, OK, it could be with a bad family. We don't know. Hopefully they're not. Hopefully they're being loved and they're being well taken care of. But no one knows where Lori's children are. No one has seen that they're alive and well. So I feel like the way that he ended it was just disrespectful to the two missing children. at least maybe I'm a little too uppity about it, but it's just, that just seems very, yeah, just disrespectful.
So there's part one with a Melanie. So Melanie replied, and we already have that, making apparently Brandon has, you know, dark porn and homosexual affairs. So
right. And I wonder what the proof is of his homosexual affairs.
I right? wonder, too.
It sounds like a fucking party.
Well, I just want to know, like, what happened? You know, what is this proof that she has that he is such a terrible person as far as, like, the dark porn and... Who knows what he's doing, but I just don't see.
He was so dark and awful, she was willing, remember, to just leave the kids with him.
Well, yeah, that's my point, is like, what is this proof? And then you left your kids there? So who's the bad parent? I don't know. But I guess we don't know. We don't know who's right. We don't know who's wrong. We don't know who has the dark porn addiction. I don't know.
Or the homosexual affairs. Who knows? As Rexburg turns.
I feel like it sounds like everybody... The description, like,
yeah, so we don't know who to believe with that, but that is ongoing in Mesa.
So Madison County, you know, Rexburg's county, issued two subpoenas right. in connection to Lori and the children. So there are a total actually of four subpoenas are addressed to the Madison County School District, Kennedy Elementary School in Rexburg, and the owners of a Kauai Beach resort and a rental property in which Lori Vallow and her husband Chad Daybell stayed. So mm-hmm. There are two subpoenas for the school, one right. for the beach resort, and one for the rental property.
Correct.
So, do you want to talk a little bit more about the subpoenas?
Sure. So, okay. So, the subpoenas compel the property owners or officials to appear in court on March 9th for a hearing in Madison County. So, they're basically seeking the records, anything related to the couple's lease or rental agreements from Hawaii. So that was from August 1st, 2019 to present. So anytime they may have even been looking at the properties, I guess, because none of this went down until September, as well as any record related to the school, any of the education programs for JJ, just literally anything with their information on it they want. So they're also looking at, for the, at least the hotel that they were at, or the resort, they're looking for booking information, reservation dates, how they paid, phone yeah. records, just literally anything related to the resort. So they want it by March 9th. They want them there for the hearing. Now, she's still in Kauai, and... I don't know if she'll be there by then, but I guess they're still going to go forward and get all this information. And I believe if you read the actual subpoenas, they seem very like they're very forcefully written.
Yeah.
They want these documents and they want it immediately. So hopefully that gives us more information about like when did they start planning these trips, or, you know, like when JJ went to school, how many days was he gone? Like, was he actually going to school every day? Just, there's so many different things it may answer that we're not even thinking of.
No, that's true.
Thank you. You know,
now that we're talking, though, about, like, lease agreements and stuff from Hawaii, did you want to bring up that lovely email that came out?
Yeah. So let's talk about letters and emails. This is the letters and emails section of our show, because it's going to be a section this fucking episode. okay, so... Let's start with the email from Chad to a rental property. So it looks like KauaiDreams.com is a realty company. And right. Chad Daybell responded and emailed this company regarding a property. And now the email was sent on November 8th, right? So the kids are already missing. It's the beginning of November. Don't forget that the police go towards, like, what, the end of November, like the 28th, I believe. So, early November, Chad emails this property and says, quote, "We are interested in seeing this property. Would the owners be interested in leasing this property to a clean couple with no pets or children? Please let us know. Thank you."
Mm-hmm. No children.
No children.
So, that also just goes again that they never made it to Hawaii. Now, that email was sent to the police, And then also, I believe Fox 10 got a hold of it from Julie Black. And that's the owner of Kauai Dreams Realty.
Yes, that is correct.
So terrifying that they just want to be so open about the fact that they don't have children now.
What's so interesting is that Julia Black got this email, didn't open it, because, you know, she clearly gets, like, a lot. If you look at her inbox, right, it's, like, all the 7th and the 8th. And she gets a lot of emails, and she actually said that she didn't recognize it until she went back, like, after the shitstorm happened. And then she saw his name in her inbox and was like, what the fuck?
Oh, my God, that's crazy. And
that's just crazy, though, for a realtor not to... to be so up to date with emails, right? Too, just saying. I mean, nothing. I just feel like a realtor wants that money. But it is interesting that it was just sitting there for a while. Then she's like, "Oh my gosh!" So here's this email I have, and they literally spell out that there are no children. But there is an interview with her that I saw. I think Justin Lum actually shared it, where she did like a video conference with them. And at one point, I believe it's the owner of the property said that that God was going to show them where to go or show them what house to go to, and they chose hers. Just so many random little things.
Wow.
So let's get into the juicy part. So
more emails.
More emails. Actually, let's start with a letter. Before we get into the emails, let's do Alex Cox's prison letters.
Oh, those are interesting, too. So, all right. So one of Alex's friends came forward February 20th. So this was actually before. We just missed it. There's so many different things. But his friend Mary Tracy did a remote interview with Justin Lum. He's on it. But they had met back in a comedy club in Phoenix in 2006 because he did stand up, and they became friends. Now, when he went to jail, remember, he went to jail for 90 days after he tased Joseph Ryan and threatened to kill him. So that's one of Lori's ex-husbands. That is Tylee's father, just to put our map together real quick. So she recognized or came forward and said he was really obsessed and almost fixated with this desire to get, you know, Joe or Joseph Ryan. And there are several letters that she found where he mentions his ex-brother-in-law. At one point in one letter, it says, "Do me a favor, call Janice," which is Lori's mother. "Ask her to put Joe's address in a postcard and his license plate number. I think it will be popular here." So he wanted Joe's address to disperse into the jail?
Yeah, so basically to kill him. This girl, right? This woman who is friends with him, she is also actually in the big Facebook group that we are in. Right. That's actually how I initially saw this story, when she posted, you know, screenshots of the letter herself, like, directly into this group. Mm-hmm. And she said that she didn't even think anything about it at all. That he was like, give me his address and this and that. And she even admits now that he was obsessed with Joe, but she's like, I laughed it off. I just didn't think that he was actually asking for that. And I'm like, are we kidding? Like,
there's no way.
And it's weird the way that he interjected it in the letter. So I have the letter in front of me, and at one point he says, I apologize for the boyfriend joke. I couldn't make it work. So I don't know if he just said something rude or not tasteful. Then he goes into the would you do me a favor, call Janice part, and then he says, okay, let's talk about me. We get to go outside for rec 1 hour a day, 4 days a week. So it's just like the way that he interjected it into the letter, too, was just random thoughts. I'm thinking about him and I want to kill him, or I want people to kill him for me. Now let's talk about what I get to do in jail.
Woo. And okay.
There's another one at the bottom of a letter. And I don't know if it's the same letter. It's hard to tell just because, you know, the paper's the same. But it says, P.S. Can you get a picture from Lori of one of her ex-husbands and send it to me? Some of the guys would really like to hang out with him. Real talk. What? And he says one of her ex-husbands, plural. So it wasn't even just Joseph. There was two others before him.
The one thing that has come, and you know what? I'll just hold on to my thought, but it is very clear, I believe, too. And Tracy, the woman who is friends with Alex, who got these letters, who received these letters, believes that Lori basically manipulated Alex into believing certain things. One of our previous shows, we discussed how, for some reason, Alex believed that Joseph Ryan, Lori's, previous husband, was molesting the children.
Oh, that's so messed up.
So Tracy believes that Lori convinced Alex that Joseph was molesting Tylee, and that
or had harmed her.
Well, and another one, someone actually said like molestation. Like apparently, Alex had told people that he believed that Joe was a child molester.
Okay, but maybe, all right, let's say that was the case, right? But then why is he going after the other ex-husbands?
That makes no sense.
Right? I'm sure all of them did not
go crazy. And a picture from Lori of one of her ex-husbands. He said, I'd like to hang out with him. I think that I don't think that he was referencing, like, multiple. I think he was still talking about one.
I guess. It could be. It's just, it's a PS at the bottom of a letter written, below everything. But still, just, I mean, if you thought someone harmed your niece, I can see doing whatever to get back. But also, you're in jail right now, and
I don't know. I'm going to speculate, and I want to preface what I'm saying right now with, this is 100% pure speculation on my part. There is no actual evidence that is, that I'm going off of. This is just pure speculation on my part. I believe that Lori manipulated Alex, possibly even sexually, like incestuously, because multiple people who have known them said that Alex was like unnaturally obsessed and in love with Lori, like would do anything for her beyond like a brotherly thing. And if you actually look at multiple times when Alex has stayed with her, like the apartment complex in Idaho, Alex's apartment was bare, had no bed. Where did he sleep? And then likewise in Arizona, when the day that Charles was dead, he had like a mattress on the floor, but like even cops said that it hadn't been touched. So, like, I don't know. I feel like Lori is, like, the pure definition of evil in this story and has basically manipulated Alex via whatever means to pretty much do her bidding throughout the years. So, that is my own personal speculation.
Also, just his friend in the article also has her speculation, too, or, her thoughts. And she says that she hopes and prays that the kids are in some wackadoodle compound somewhere.
Wackadoodle.
Being taken care of by these wacky, weird people.
Mole women.
Oh, my God.
So they're mole women.
I mean, honestly, I do. I still hope that. I don't 100% believe it, but I do have that hope that they are being hidden from someone or, Lori.
I'm actually going to be honest. I have more hope this week that they are actually be alive and hidden than I even did last week.
I kind of do, too.
Yeah, and even Chad finally spoke out. I know we're jumping a little bit, but he did. There's a report told by AEBC, and he says the kids are safe. And that was all he said. He declined to go into specifics with the network about the children's health or where they are. But he did say the kids are safe.
I'm going to say likelihood is still slim, but we can be hopeful.
And Yeah.
And also don't forget, the validity of it. I don't know. But the Christopher Parrott, the, founder of Avow, last week we discussed it on that episode. But he was best friends with Chad Daybell. And he claims that before Lori's arrest, that Lori and Chad both spoke to him and that the kids are safe and well taken care of. Yes. And that they're just waiting, Chad's writing a book about this shit, and they're just waiting for the right time. Now, don't forget, too, that it is now March, and according to Lori and Chad, the end of days is coming up in July.
Oh, yeah.
We're only 4 months away.
Protecting them from the end of the world. Well, that came out, and then also at one point... But did you find the article where it said if she did produce the kids, it was to go to foster care? I've seen that rumor running around lately.
It was actually in the live video of court.
Okay.
Of court. The charge was basically to produce the children for going into foster care. Apparently, she had fucked up so badly that they would have been sent to foster care.
And wow. See, that's strange. I mean, on that end, or on that part, if that is true, Like, if she were to produce the kids, she would have lost her kids until what? She could prove that she was a fit mother? I don't know.
Yes,
I don't
basically. Know. Because, like, and don't forget at that point, right, when she was urged on, what was it, like, January 25th or whatever? Was it January 25th to produce the kids? Or December 25th? I can't remember the day. But anyway, the day that she was scheduled to produce the kids, she did not do that. At that point in this investigation, police already knew that JJ's medication had not been filled. They already knew, you know, all of these things, right? So
right.
They already had the ability to charge her for child, like, basically desertion, you know, at okay. that point, and neglect. So regardless, her children, had she produced them, let's say that she had them squirreled away somewhere, those children would have been immediately put into foster care. So again, this is why, like, my, well, those kids are dead, you know, is kind of starting to lessen a little bit. It's like, well, shit, right. Maybe Lori realized, I mean, that's actually what was said in court in the video of the court. So, like, hearing. Okay. So maybe they're squirreled away and she's like, no, you're not putting my kids in foster care. But that right. still doesn't explain the no medication, kids. The dog, you know, like.
Right. And then her just going up and going to Hawaii, like, if your kids were still somewhere, wouldn't you want to see them and check their safety? Or I guess they just trust these people so very much with their souls that they don't have to follow up on how their children are doing.
It sounds especially unlikely.
Their autistic child.
Well, and you also know that the government has had, like, phone taps and all sorts of shit on them, you know, because this is now FBI. So, like, you know, they're marking their every telephone and email and text message move. So, like, if they had corresponded with anyone related to the kids, they probably would have been able to locate that at this point.
Oh, come on. This is 2020 and everything is smart. Exactly. And if they really want to hear you, they'll hear you. They'll know what you're doing.
But so let's talk about Yellowstone then. So, you know. And then also the last time Tylee was ever seen was in Yellowstone. So news yesterday, March 1st, about Yellowstone is Yellowstone National Park is being searched.
Yep. They're going to start. I don't know when they will start. I believe they said early March, but they're waiting to get rid of some of the snow.
There is a woman, actually multiple people on the Facebook group who live in the area surrounding Yellowstone who have said that they have seen multiple vehicles, what appears to be law enforcement agencies, you know, gassing up and going into that area. Completely unsubstantiated as it stands, other than people on Facebook, but they said that the process has already started.
Right. Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens because, yeah, it still has quite a bit of snow. And then also, like, let's say that that was the case, that she killed Tylee or, you know, Tylee's body somewhere in Yellowstone. That bought her how many months because of snow? And just, you know, it takes a while to realize they're missing. It takes a while to try to force her to tell them where she is. And then months of snow, that ground is just not going to be easily searched, you know?
But it's going to be hard. The ground's going to be solid ice, I can tell you from
exactly.
experience. Yeah. And it's going to take a very long time for the sun to actually reach it enough to where it starts to thaw out. So usually around, like, I'm going to say in that area, more than likely, like, almost May for it to thaw out. So if they do have to excavate, it's going to be very difficult for them. And on top of it, those roads are typically closed for most of the off season. So the only mm-hmm. people that can usually go through that are, like, park rangers, state troopers of some sort, or just people who, like, work within the national forest. So it's going to be very interesting to see what they're able to actually find. You know, because inclement weather continues to happen in that area for a long time, as far as snow and stuff too. So they can end up having these bouts of bad weather too. So it's gonna be really difficult for them, I think. You have a lot of wildlife too. A lot of wildlife that lives there, including bears, coyotes, everything. Like everything that, like, I mean, there's even bison, but they're not gonna eat them. But, like, you have wolves, I believe, in that area. So a lot of things can happen. Animals dig, you know, and then there's a lot of waterways, there's a few rivers in that area.
Yeah.
So if they did decide to dispose of their body near a body of water, you have a lot of factors. I mean, Tylee Ryan was last seen back in September. Mm-hmm. So you have some time that has passed, but the rivers do flow a little bit slower because of ice and et cetera, et cetera. But you still have the unknown disadvantage of wildlife and bio stuff happening. So it's going
to... What happens to a human body with the geyser things too? Because that seems to be like the biggest...
That's unlikely.
Theory. Yeah, for Tylee, unfortunately. I mean, I feel like sad even talking about it. You know, these are children, but like, you know, this is a true crime podcast. Yeah. So we kind of have to discuss these things. It's like, what happens if you were to... fall into a geyser?
I think it's highly unlikely. Those geysers are usually regularly monitored by a lot of hydrogeologists even, and it's relevant to the volcanic activity in the area. So a lot of those geysers and stuff are regularly taken temperature of and stuff, because that is a very large super caldera is what it's called. So you have a lot of testing, you have a lot of research that goes on there, even through the universities nearby. So the likelihood of a tourist attraction, even a non-tourist attraction in a heavily monitored area, is this unlikely for someone to throw somebody into a geyser and nothing to be like noticed. Geysers stink to begin with. They smell like sulfur. You know, I mean, so if you throw a body in, the thermogenics that are taking place within that geyser is very hot. So you'll have a lot of melting and separation of things like flesh, et cetera, et cetera. It's basically going to be boiled. And then you have a lot of acid, right? You have a process. And that's taking place on a of convection. So that body's going to be tossed and turned. And just trust me, somebody would notice at some point.
Well, speaking of someone noticing, it came out on Facebook in the group. And then Annie Cushing actually got behind it, too, is, you know, on September 8th, it's just possible, you know, different cases. If someone, a tourist at Yellowstone National Park, you know, happened to be taking a picture, maybe someone captured Tylee or Lori and the family on their camera inadvertently.
Right. I thought that was smart to reach out and go, hey, look, check your pictures.
Wasn't that from like a Forensic Files episode or criminal? I can't remember. Was it Criminal Minds or Forensic Files?
Something. But on the Facebook group, the big one, someone copied and pasted it and said it was from Annie, but I don't see Annie's post on like Twitter or anything. But I mean, that's very smart to call out on social media to check all their pictures, because also it could be one that's posted. She put a bunch of hashtags to check, but also it could be, hey, this picture wasn't very good. I'm going to put it on my computer, but never post it for anyone that visited that day.
Yeah.
No, it's just very smart. Mm-hmm. So I wonder how many people are trolling through their own photos from that time.
Right. If you were there, check your photos. Were there.
I hope that they do find something. Just any piece of evidence to help find her. Because nobody deserves a fate like that, period.
Right. And I believe it was the security camera footage when they went in. They identified who was there, right? Is there no cameras on your way out to see if you were missing a passenger?
It depends. The Yellowstone State Park, it has an archway that you pass through.
At every entrance?
Yes. The west entrance in particular, the one that they were at especially, has an archway, to my knowledge. I've been there. They have like stores after you enter. So you'll go through the archway and it'll say Yellowstone National Park and it looks pretty and it's cool. And then there's no cameras, to my knowledge, on the archway or anything. But then they have the souvenir shops. It's very small. It's almost like they'll usually be like six shops at the most. And then maybe there'll be lodging. Okay. And then it's wilderness for a while, depending on which entrance you're at. Right. So some are a little bit more populated than others because people who work in the park live there as well. So the surveillance would be probably from one of the souvenir shops or convenience stores of any sort, or just something that people go there to get supplies or whatever. So as far as entrance, no, it's not like a toll.
Yeah. Well, I just thought that was interesting that they had, you know, they have, I guess, them going in, but there's nothing to say everyone also left. Just kind of to keep that checks and balances there too. Like, did someone get lost in your park or... I don't know.
Well, I mean, you have to think about it this way. Some parks do have a mission that you have to pay, like a fee. If you're not like a geologist or somebody who works there or is doing something like scientific or relevant to the parks, you have to pay a fee. Period. They check you in a way, like they take your card or whatever, but you can pay cash. That doesn't mean that there's surveillance of you. Like, it's just so public, and it's a public service of federal lands. So they don't really quite care, because a lot of the people who work there are actually federal workers and stuff too. So I don't know. I mean, I wish that they had like some places have guest logs, but that's a choice, you know?
Well, not necessarily that, but I mean, there is a lot of places that when you do enter it, whether it be, you know, a national park versus even, I don't know, certain public place. Hold on, let me think. So when you enter other places too, sometimes there's like a camera that checks your, you know, just takes a picture of your license plate as you enter. I mean, even airports or some hotels even have something set up to where they see who's going in, who's leaving, that sort of thing. So it's just, I know that they said there's security camera footage of them being at the park. It's just, was it when they were leaving, when they were going in? When was this footage taken? It was more, yeah, I just didn't know when, you know, when they just say security, they didn't clarify when this security picture or whatever it may be was taken. That's all. I know when we were talking about emails, though, we did glaze over a couple.
Yes. So I guess like the two big things this week would be emails. Okay, so we basically learned how conniving Lori was this week, which adds a whole other layer to this shit show. So
yes,
the very first email we got was Chad Daybell's email to Lori talking about the seven things he wants them to accomplish together. And these seven things, I'll just read them off really quick.
So when this email happened, so this email was early 2019. So this was before Tammy's death and before Charles's death.
Yes. Which more and more stuff lines up, and we'll talk about that in a moment too. So the seven things, Chad says seven missions to accomplish together. And number one, translate ancient records. Number two, write the book about the translation process. Number three, identify locations in Northeast Arizona for white camps. Four, presidency of the Church of Firstborn. Five, help establish the food distribution as the tribulations start and the delegate. Six, ordain individuals to translation as the camps begin. And seven, provide supplies to righteous members of families. And this all sounds very, 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 very end of days.
Yeah, it sounds so strange. So it's hard to even say, like, what do those mean? And I've been looking and trying to be like, okay, someone that knows someone, please tell me what any of this is. And a lot of people are also confused by it.
Yeah, a lot of people are really confused by it. And my lovely favorite person, Julie Rowe, came out and said that, like, after she saw that this is the kind of shit that Chad was talking about, supposedly this is when she distanced herself from him, is when he started talking about, like, this aspect of his belief systems.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, just if we want to talk about what we were able to find on some of them.
What did you have?
Well, yeah, and on the Facebook group, so this was the Christmas Misery group, there's a whole string of people discussing these seven things, and they're just saying that that's the color tents that were used for certain groups of people in his books.
So did he have it color-coded based on, like, their level?
Yeah, I mean, according to, again, this Facebook group, there's a post from Jennifer. And it says, in his books, white camps were for the people who left early when told by the church to leave everything behind and come to these camps. Blue camps were for the people that left later and they were less supplied and not in as good locations. So I never read his books. I know a lot of people now have been buying them from Amazon and reading them. So let's hope that she, you know, is quoting the book, I guess. But that's something that we can look into later as well. And then I did Google around for what the meaning of the Church of Firstborn is, because just off the top of my head, that sounds even worse than what it is. But I went to templestudy.com.
Oh.
And it's, yeah, I'm learning a lot here. So it says, the Church of the Firstborn is Christ's heavenly church, and its members are exalted beings who gain an inheritance in the highest heaven of the celestial world, and for whom the family continues in eternity. So, higher beings?
Kind of, it sounds a little, like, it sounds like every religion and every branch of a religion, everyone thinks you're the best. I mean, so, it's hard not to believe that you're the best when you feel like you've chosen the best, right? So, hard to tell with them.
They get to go to the highest heaven, I guess. So, I don't, again, trying to decipher, this is insane, but he says the presidency of the Church of Firstborn. So, does that mean he wants to, I don't know what that means. He wants to take over. I guess there are, some say there are locations of this, that it is kind of like a break off of it, but then others are just like, this is what a certain type of person is called. It's hard to differentiate what he means without anything other than that one sentence.
Just speculation. I wonder the name Firstborn. I wonder if they're trying to, if it has a basis of like, they're trying to say, because some religions believe that people are born with sin and some religions believe people are born without sin. And that's like a big like split on some religions and different branches and stuff. So I'm wondering if they're trying to say that they are born without sin, and that they are able to acquire the highest place in heaven, and that they don't have to repent, or sort of speak, you know, like a lack of a better word.
I don't know, but I wonder where, you know, if they were scouting these locations in Arizona too, what were they looking for, and did they find places for these camps? Like, where did they end? These were their missions to accomplish together. And remember, they did podcasts, and they did have we don't know what kind of relationship, but they knew each other before all of this went down. So who knows? I tried to listen to some of their podcasts too, and everyone's having a very hard time finding them since they were taken down. But there was another podcast that, Robin, you actually sent me finally a link that worked.
Yeah.
And I did listen to it in the car, and it was insane.
It's absolutely insane. These people are certifiably mentally ill. Like, this isn't, like, I mean, this is extreme, extreme, extreme. Like, they're becoming gods, and they're going to ordain in spiritual bodies, and we're going to live in tent cities, and Jesus Christ is going to come down on, like, a cloud, and X, Y, and Z.
I mean,
it's insane.
And it seemed like it was one of the first ones with Lori, and Chad wasn't there. It was someone else. But they introduced Lori and how they met. So, or, you know, how the person who was conducting the podcast met her. But it was, I mean, I will say, I tuned out a little. It was hard to listen to as far as just all the stuff that they were going over.
Do these people hold seminars and stuff?
I mean, I don't know if there's seminars, but they did have like get-togethers, I believe. Yeah, I don't know, but let's see. So, yeah, obtaining individuals to translation as the camps begin. Is that when the world's ending? Is that coming up?
Or are they going to come back
to Arizona and go to the Northeast Arizona white camps? Like, what is this? Yeah. But they uncovered this weird email. If you have any other information that you'd like to add, we would love to hear your side.
My interpretation is that it sounds, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, just interpretation. It sounds like that they're converging LDS with some other Christian like ideology, and then meets it with a doomsday sort of like thing, to where they're kind of like a second coming and stuff, and then relocation. But they're taking the concepts, like old school value concepts of LDS, and then twisting it into something just different. I mean, because the camps and stuff, like, I don't know. I don't know how far they go with the doomsday stuff on this. That's what will be very interesting to find out.
Well, yeah, the that podcast, they literally say, and we're in the end times.
No, they fully admit that we are in the end times. They think it's going to happen, is it like July 20th?
Oh, that's soon?
Yeah, like in 4 months.
In 4 months? I don't know how I'm going to prepare.
And Lori is a god.
Lori is a god? Can't. It's hard to be a god when you're behind bars, isn't it?
Well, maybe she's going to find her way out. Who knows?
Maybe she's going to use her god powers and bust out.
No, you guys should listen to it. Just how they're like, and we are in the end times. And you're like, okay, thank you for that. And they met because they were supposed to meet. They were led to each other to meet and to create this podcast and to create, you know, helping people get ready for the end times.
Oh, I'm sure helping. helping people end times.
Like we said, though, we have so many random weird emails and letters and stuff this week. It was just email haven.
Yes. So let's go to the next email, which is the juiciest one that we have on this list. So,
okay. So there's two emails that we'd like to bring up that were uncovered. One is to Chad. Now, this is written to Chad from Charles. So remember, Charles is Lori's now ex-husband, or estranged husband. They weren't technically divorced yet when he passed. But anyways, so it was an email that he found that he actually did not write. So Lori wrote this, but said it was Charles writing it, if that makes sense. That's a lot of weird information all in one. So the email says, "Hello, Chad. I hope you're doing well. This is Charles Vallow from Arizona. We really enjoyed having you stay with us back in November when you came for the Preparing a People conference." So there you go, Jackie. There's conferences.
I knew it. We were approached by one of those people. I'm pretty sure we've met one.
Well, now you could have given me information from the inside. Now, it says, "I appreciated you taking the time to talk to me about the book I've been working on. Well, more than 6 months later, I still haven't made much progress on it, but I feel the urgency to get it done. As the managing partner of Write Planning Group, I'm going to have the opportunity to speak at various conventions beginning in the fall. But everyone says that I need to have the book available that summarizes my life and shares the principles I follow. So I will cut to the chase. I'm willing to pay you to help me with this book. Help me get this book in shape as my ghostwriter. I really liked your autobiography and the tone you took in sharing experiences without preaching. Is there a way that you could come here for a couple of days and help me get this book underway? I feel like talking in person would be much more valuable than a phone call or a video chat, mainly because I would like you to read through some of my journals and explain to me how the publishing industry works," which that could be done through email. "It would help me to know whether I truly have a book in me and whether you want to team up on it. I played minor league baseball." So again, remember, he played baseball. He would have hit Alex a lot harder. "And I have plenty of stories that my audience could relate to, along with the knowledge I've gained running my own company. So I do feel like the book would contain valuable information even beyond the convention circuit. I'm out of town until Saturday, but I would gladly fly you down here next week before the holiday to cover your expenses. You could stay in our guest room like before, or in a hotel if you prefer. I hate to take you away from your family, and I know this book is vital to my speaking success. I understand if you don't want to take part in the project, but I would definitely make it worth your time. With admiration, Charles." So Charles discovers this email and was like, "I didn't write this email, you know." And also, I want to know about the first time he came to Arizona and stayed with them. What happened with that? Is that when Lori and him actually, like, got together? Or, you know, is that when their relationship started? Were they just really good friends? Like,
well, apparently, even going back to 2016 or 2015, Lori had been talking to Chad and sending pictures of herself dancing and whatnot. Like, sending pictures of herself to Chad. So
right. And he was married for, what, 20 plus years?
Yep.
I don't know. This is all crazy. But yeah, so that is this mysterious email that Charles found that apparently he was sending to Chad. So obviously Lori wrote that.
So in now, turn,
Robin.
Yeah. In turn, Charles then emails Adam, Lori's brother. So Charles himself confirmed as Charles. emails Adam, and he says, Adam, open this letter and see what she did. I'm not sure if the relationship with her, Chad Dave, I'm not sure if of the relationship with her and Chad Daybell, but they are up to something. She created an email alias for me as I've never set this one up. She sent this yesterday. Oh, well, there we go. She sent this yesterday, and I guess she forgot all of her emails are on the computer at my house. I asked her to explain it, and she started blaming you, Brandon, and me for perpetuating a scheme against her. Just more of her paranoia. She will not explain it. I am going to send it to Chad Daybell's wife. Her name is Tammy, and I found her email address on their website. I've got her cell number, too. Sounds very suspicious to me. What do you think? Whenever she gets caught doing this kind of stuff, she starts blaming everybody else. Mostly me, you, and Brandon. Brandon and I are the victims of her craziness. I wish you luck trying to help her. I was the only one brave enough to try to get her help in January, and look what happened to me. The whole family put a scarlet letter on me. Maybe now they can see what they're up against. Thanks. So
scary. Wow.
So right. The email from Lori to, quote unquote, basically from Lori to Chad was on June 28th of 2019. Right. And Charles stumbles across the email on his own computer and is like, what the fuck? Because at that point, isn't this the point where he and Lori are separated, however, still kind of trying to work on their marriage?
I believe so.
So, basically, more or less, and he, at this point in June, Charles has known about Chad Daybell for a couple years at this point. So, it looks like at this point, he's finally suspicious, at least, of maybe an affair or something. He even says it's suspicious and says, I'm going to contact Tammy. So right. Now we have confirmation that Charles Vallow knew of Chad, like confirmation that he knew of Chad Daybell and knew of Tammy, and that he had plans of talking to her.
Yeah. Did he ever send it? I wonder. Well, and see, so that is the week or around the week that they had moved in. So June 20th, 2019, according to Annie, Lori Vallow moves into a rental home in Chandler, Arizona. And that was a Facebook post by the landlord that was deleted. And then June 29th is when these emails were happening. But also, what happened when he tried? What kind of help did he try to get her in January?
Remember in January after she pulled, like, stealing his money and all that kind of shit, how he tried to get her help and get her into basically, like, a mental health facility? Okay, we talked about it on, like, the first episode.
Yeah, police say Lori would be allowed to go to the facility willingly to talk to staff. If she did not, she would be taken in involuntarily. Well, in the relationship with Adam, at least from what I've read, he seems like the normal one of the siblings.
Also, I'm sending a picture to everyone. So someone in the Facebook group, side note entirely, someone in the Facebook group actually lives in the Idaho area and went to an Avow event, like the type of events that Chad went to constantly.
Okay.
And it posted some pictures of them.
There's white tents.
And yeah, what do you see? White tents. Probably like a complete, like symbolic, but.
Maybe white camp. I don't know.
So that is what the Avow, like this is the circuit that Chad traveled on. So interesting. It just kind of like an overhead tent with a lot of elderly people sitting underneath it talking.
A very different type of rainbow gathering.
Yeah. You know what this looks like too? I don't know if it's hard to remember what TV show it was, but they were saying like when some sort of like apocalyptic thing happens or world's ending or something crazy happens, they have this weird meetup area and then they practice like drills, like all the people. And that's what this picture looks like to me, is one of the weird drills that some of the prepper people do.
Yeah, that's what it kind of looks like, maybe.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if that's what it is.
I thought that
we'll post them.
They're like these really interesting. I do imagine that these dome tents are relatively expensive.
Yeah. Well, right. The person that Robin talked about who got accidentally in the cult was like, how much money did she spend in a matter of a few months?
15,000 to 25,000, she said.
Mm-hmm. To get get ready.
It costs a lot to get ready for the apocalypse. It's coming in 4 months, you guys.
Mm-hmm. Now, something that I would like to cover on our next episode is a lot of shit came out about Lori's family this week, too. About how her dad was arrested, he was arrested, let go, but fined, right? He was fined for practicing law without a license. Her, also for tax evasion. And Lori's mother faked her own death. And, like, that's
wouldn't
just her.
You to get out of that family?
My God. And, like, for tax evasion purposes. And then, like, you know, she has Alex as a brother. And then, you know, speculation that her Alex killed their sister. The one who was in the hospital, was it Stacy, I believe?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, credit cards, right? After she died.
So, basically, this has been confirmed that, their sister, Stacy, was a severe diabetic, but she would go in and out of the hospital frequently. And so she was on one of her normal hospital stays, and Alex and Lori go in to visit her. Lori walks out, and suddenly she's fucking dead. Stacy's dead. And immediately, within 30 minutes of Stacy dying, Alex is using her credit cards, like, out and about in the community. So, like, that story has been confirmed. So it just sounds like this fucking family is just a group of fucking psychopaths, because, like...
It can be I believe it could be genetic.
Her other brother, though, Adam, I mean, the one that Charles was reaching out to for help, like, he seems like he has things together, at least from what I've seen about him in some of the posts where they... where they've gotten information from him,
and what about
they even got?
What about Lucas?
They've been sharing. Oh, I don't have much on Lucas. I've just been seeing a lot of people are sharing his posts, like his Facebook posts, because his profile you can kind of see a lot. I'm surprised actually that he has it so open, has like where he works, and you can kind of scroll back and see pictures of him with his brothers.
Man, it's just. There's so many people involved, and it's crazy. But, yeah, so we now have potential motive. Would you call that a potential motive?
For?
Murder.
For whose murder?
Everybody's murder. Everybody's getting murdered. It's like Oprah murder here.
Yeah.
For basically Chad and Lori to, like, you know, was a sign of the affair, Lori creating an alias, you know, inviting Chad. So, I mean, that could be.
I think it could be a lead, Cox
family. Yeah, and I had tagged you too in pictures of their family, like their family pictures from Adam's profile. But yeah, it just seems like, what was she hiding so much? Like, if she was just working with Chad for like podcasts and books and all that fun stuff, wouldn't you just go, oh, hey, I'm working on this project. This really helped with him, you know, being here for us to get these whatever camps or information out there.
Well, I mean, there were signs of an affair happening before that. I mean, I even talked about it in the last episode, because it has been confirmed that Lori would lie to Charles and go to Idaho. Like, he would know that she was going to Idaho, but he didn't know why. And she was going to see Chad, like, and, you know, some of his gatherings and whatnot. And Melanie would go with her. So this affair has been going on for probably a couple of years. Speculation, obviously, I don't know the exact date of the affair. But, like, they've been together talking, doing podcasts, and she's been lying to Charles for years.
Yeah, and that's sad that he found, yeah, she's just misrepresenting, too. Like, why did she send it from him? That just makes no sense.
Also, the other, I wonder how many of you watched the Dr. Phil episode this week?
Yeah, that, I feel like it was just a good, like, a really good recap of everything that's happened. And it's nice to put, you know, the person to the voice that you're seeing or the post that you're seeing as far as, like, the family members go. Kay is everywhere.
Yeah, Kay is everywhere. So is Kay's husband. Annie Cushing, though, is kind of like, she's everywhere online with her website, Annalytics. She's keeping one hell of a timeline. She is Joseph Ryan's sister, Lori's previous husband, his wife, his sister. But one of the saddest things that I've seen, because she stays so non-biased for the most part, right? Like, when she's giving facts. But after we posted our episode, so on the night of the 23rd, February 23rd, just like a week ago, She posted that the Chandler, Arizona Police Department, in her opinion, mishandled this family as a whole in January of 2019. Basically, like you were mentioning a moment ago, Amanda, how Lori, you know, basically like all the shit went down and Charles called the police on her. And it basically they were threatening to put Lori away in the, you know, in the mental facility.
Yeah, which is crazy.
And so she actually discusses the police report and whatnot, and you can actually see it in the language of the police officer and the police report how they did not take it seriously.
Mm-mm.
How they basically saw, you know, a hot little blonde woman and were like, okay, and then they're like, this big guy says he's basically being spousally abused, okay, whatever, you know, like that's literally even kind of the tone of the language in the police report.
No offense to all police officers in Arizona, but most of them don't take most things seriously when it comes to like women. I hate to say it, but like it's just crazy. It's like, I don't know if it's a cultural thing or it's just really socially acceptable or something, but it's just a culture that I've noticed in Arizona, and it's crazy to me.
I still cannot fathom or understand how the police, just the day that Alex shot Charles, the behavior, right? Their behavior as a whole. Like, Alex is like, okay, cool, I guess I'm gonna go downtown. I'm happy to, you know, talk to you, whatever. Yeah. Oh, you need to frisk me? Cool, go ahead. And then Lori's, like, laughing and talking about the neighbors. And it's right. Just like, how did the police not catch on something there?
That blew me away when I watched the police cam, and I was just like, really? This guy just murdered someone. And, like, I understand. You're innocent until proven guilty. Sure, like, but also take him in and talk to him in a room that you have control over, please.
Right.
Or just act like someone just died, because I feel like it was just insensitive the way that everyone was handling it. I don't know. But it could just be me being on the poor dead guy's side.
Yeah.
I don't think that it was self-defense, even though everyone is still claiming self-defense.
Who?
I just don't. It's still written as self-defense as of right now, from what I understand. They're investigating it. They're still investigating, but it's hard to investigate when both parties are dead. But yeah. I just feel like the blow to the head would have been more significant for a college ball player.
He was a guy of his stature.
It just depends, too, you know? I mean, I guess we just need more information as well. I mean, I would like more information so I can make it good.
There's not going to be more because everyone's dead.
Yeah, it's true.
So. Well, I mean,
unfortunately.
Yeah. Also, one of the other things is that people have confirmed that Lori's parents, Janice and Barry Cox, right? So they live in St. George, Utah. And apparently, just some background information, because her parents have been like mute on all of this,
yes.
Right? Like completely mute. And so
I think I asked that, like, where are her parents?
Yeah. But anyway, so Barry Cox apparently seems to be like a complete anti-government, get the fuck out of my yard and off my property or I'll kill you type of people. Ah. Lori's dad. So people are speculating that maybe they have the kids. So because they've completely gone off the grid. They're staying with friends. And, like, to go completely off the grid. So, that's just really, really awkward that, like, their daughter's being slung through the media. And they're just like, peace out.
Yeah.
That's not very supportive.
Also, would you want to be associated with it if you didn't agree with her? Just saying, I don't know. I don't know how they feel about it, but.
But I would be very loud and proud. I wouldn't want my name on it. Oh, I would. I would be out there and be like, I don't condone this. This has nothing to do with me. Like, I would be making sure everyone knew.
Maybe, but it's also like, do you want everyone contacting you every day? Every time you open your door, someone's waiting to talk to you again. Or you go to the grocery store and someone's like, oh, hey, what do you think about this? Like, it could just be they don't want to be that. Especially if they're, you know, anti-government, anti-everything. They probably want everyone to leave them the hell alone.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, those people typically are the ones that post the sign, all trespassers will be shot, so.
Yeah, so I guess just upcoming, I'm estimating this week is she'll probably be extradited to Idaho. And, you know, Chad's already waiting there in Idaho for her. And we'll see what other weird emails and letters and whatever else comes up this week. The search in Yellowstone should either have already been started or is starting. And we'll try to stay up to date as much as we can.
Do you guys have any guesses or predictions for the next week?
I'm just saying that extradition, I feel like they keep all these weird little hints keep coming out about the kids are safe. So I'm wondering if there's just going to be more of those hints.
Yeah. I think that there's going to, I think that we may turn up something in Yellowstone soon.
I'm hoping a picture.
A picture?
Not a body.
Yeah. Well,
I'm just hoping, okay? Well, I'm hoping that, someone that visited Yellowstone that same day, hopefully, you know, took a family picture and they're in the background.
I want to be hopeful, but one thing that I have learned in my life is that if there's a pattern of behavior, that pattern usually doesn't break. So I'm hoping for the best, but on the same note, I'm not that hopeful. So I really do wish the best for them, but I just think that we're going to probably hear something, a little bit more findings, I think, from the FBI and police, and hopefully the autopsy comes back and we get a little more of a definitive picture of what's been going on.
Right. I'm just surprised that Alex's hasn't come back yet.
I bet that his will come back next, and I bet that Chad Daybell, a warrant will be issued for his arrest, and they'll grab him, like, same time.
Right. Well, from what, you know, the people that live in that area have been saying is that he's had several cars at his house, and they're not sure who's all been visiting him. Are they planning something? Is it just his family seeing him? What's going on with him?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's going to be interesting. This happened, like, it seems like every single day there's something, you know, that comes pouring out. But I would say that the email, the fake email that Lori sent as Charles Vallow to Chad was probably the cherry on top of the sundae this week.
I think so. Yeah, that was probably my most interesting read from this week. But like we said, the last couple is just things change almost every hour. So we try to stay up to date as fast as we can, but if there is little things that are shared throughout the week, we've typically been, you know, retweeting them or sharing them on our page. But we will keep going with updates.
Indeed. So once again, thank you for listening. We really appreciate your support. Don't forget, you can check us out on Twitter at We Saw the Devil, on Instagram at We Saw the Devil Podcast. Facebook, We Saw the Devil. And once again, help us make the show the best that it can be and be a patron. And you can find our Patreon at patreon.com/We Saw the Devil. Until next week.